Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show, folks, and this is Tony, your host. And I just want to start off by saying thank you to the generosity of people. In the last show, I mentioned that I'd had my recording mixer die and was borrowing one. I'm still using the borrowed one today, but thanks to all of those very generously donated, I've actually now had the money come in to buy a replacement one, and that has been ordered, and hopefully it'll arrive today or tomorrow. So thank you so much to the people that did donate. It's very much appreciated. Okay, on the show today I have James Musker returning, and I can tell you this is a very, very interesting interview. I enjoyed it thoroughly doing it, and James always brings out such great information, and I learn a lot from him. I want to offer a very warm welcome to James Musker on the A Minute to Midnight show. I think now this is the third time we've had you on the show, James, and the first two times have been awesome. I'm sure tonight is going to be really good. Well, it's early morning for you. It's night for me because you're in England and I'm in New Zealand. And I have to say to people, get a hold of James's book, The New World Religion, The Beliefs of the Elite. I have a copy of it. It's a fantastic book. Definitely on the top of the pile, I think, for this type of subject. Great to be talking to you, James.
Well, thanks very much for having me again. Great to be here.
Ah, and it's my pleasure. And we've had people say, you know, you got to get James back. So it was funny because I just emailed you and said, James, can you come back? And I got an email a few minutes later, someone asking me, can you get James back? So I was able to say, yeah, well, actually, I just emailed him. So
yeah.
Yep.
Amazing timing.
Yes. So, all right, where are we going with this tonight?
Well, I thought we should do a quick recap of the main thesis of the book and the sinister conspiracy of the New World Religion to start with. And then we're going to look at the United Religions Initiative, the Rees Committee, and some other pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to help everyone put it all together. And then, of course, end up on 9/11, which is a vitally important part of everything that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, the ultimate aim of the hidden government that really runs us is the total control of the economic, political, and governmental areas of all nations. And this aspect has already been accomplished, in my opinion. So I'm just setting the scene that the political and economic areas my book touches upon, but it doesn't really cover. It really homes in on the religious aspect. And the part that people are continually missing is the belief system that will underlie their technocratic state, because you can't have a new world order without a new world creed. And that is what the new world religion is all about. It's about the subtle manipulation of culture into their all-encompassing Masonic society, in which religions are greyed out and amalgamated as a control network, eventually leading to the emergence of their Luciferian religion, which is their end goal. This is the only area which has not been subdued, along with depopulation and some other Agenda 21 issues. And they have to bring this into effect, and that's what I really mention in the book, The New World Religion and the Beliefs of the Elite. So it's quite a complicated strategy, as you might imagine, because they've got to force and bolt all the religions together. So I believe their long-term strategy for ecumenism is for the Roman Catholics to join up with the Protestants, and perhaps each side will compromise on some of their doctrinal beliefs. And then once the Catholics and the main Protestant denominations, such as Anglicans, have merged, then they will try to force and forge all the other religions together to accept each other within the sort of brotherhood of man concept, which will lead to the new utopian society, which is really what all this is about, heading towards their Masonic concept.
So it's really interesting. I noticed just how often I pick up Alice Bailey's teachings and people's comments from the United Nations and political leaders and all sorts of religious leaders and so on. You can certainly see that it's all interlinked, that's for sure.
Yes, well, Alice Bailey spoke about the Church Universal, and that was mainly mentioned, I think, in the Externalization of the Hierarchy book. And this is what we're really seeing the, particularly the Protestants and Catholics getting together. We're seeing this deep ecumenism concept, the idea of creating common ground. And we've got the activities of the Pope, Rick Warren, Kenneth Copeland, and many other New World sort of preachers, dare I say it, who we can look at, and funded groups, rather New World Order funded groups that we will look at and in a bit. So once this is done, they've got Christianity bolted together in one form. Then they'll try to form Chrislam, which is when Islam and Christianity will be in some way merged. It does seem perhaps a little far-fetched, but maybe it might be more of an acknowledgement that each has the truth and must coexist together for the sake of the new global order. And then other religions such as Hinduism and Buddhism will be readily forged into the mold. And later on, New Age and atheism, which are easy to deal with. So they're going to sell it to us as being an attractive alternative to the violence of the past and the duty of to be a good planetary citizen, to adhere to their dictates. And it's all linked in with Sustainable Development Agenda 21, that if they can have the environmental aspect of it beneath, then all the religions will join together as a sort of pantheistic belief system. And then eventually that will lead to their end goal, which is really Luciferianism.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Luciferianism too, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about David Spangler and his comment about no one will enter the New World Order unless they, I can't remember the exact words, but basically worship Lucifer. And David Spangler is certainly tied up with the Lucius Trust and the Findhorn Foundation and so on. He's quite a big player in all of that. And of course, they're all tied in with the United Nations as well. So, very interesting. And just completely off the track a little bit, but I was just thinking as we were talking about Alice Bailey, and I was thinking about George Bush Sr., who died. And of course, he gave that speech about the 1,000 points of light, and then he formed his 1,000 points of light organization. And by crikey, that comes pretty much straight out of Alice A. Bailey's writings, all those points of light, and of course, Freemasonry too. So it's just like, all the pieces all of the puzzle all joined together, really, or just like little fingers all going back to the same basic hand, really.
That's right. And we're going to look at some of those beliefs and some of the history of it. But the United Nations and these top leaders, they do seem to be of New Age extraction. And it is linked in with theosophy and Illuminism. So Adam Weishaupt and the Bavarian Illuminati, we're going to look at that and the more modern form of that, which is Skull and Bones. So we'll look at that in a moment. But the New World religion concept really started back in 1893 with the World Parliament of Religions. And you have Swami Vivekananda, who was a key figure in the introduction of Indian philosophies and Hindu beliefs and yoga to the West. Ever since that first World Parliament of Religions, there have been regular meetings promoting the concept of interfaith dialogue or interfaith pathways leading to some sort of progressive conclusion. And it started on September the 11th, 1893.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's coincidence, perhaps not.
I don't
think so. It's the world's first wide-ranging, truly interfaith attempt at bringing the world's religions together. And in more modern times, we've got the United Religions Initiative, which was started in 1995 by Bishop William Swing of the Episcopal Church Diocese of California. And so URI, United Religions Initiative, was promoted by the UN in 1993 after Gillian Sorensen, who is a CFR member, and then the Deputy Secretary of the UN, who invited Bishop Swing to hold an interfaith service at Grace Cathedral in 1995 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the signing of the UN Charter. He then travelled all over the world via their headquarters, seeking to make relationships with religious leaders and other interfaith activists. And he was not met with complete success. So he was going to the heads of leaders and saying, let's all get together, form this United Religions, find common ground, bring in the deep ecumenism concept. But the leaders went, sorry, we don't really like that idea. And so he then concluded that the best way to affect this interfaith dialogue would not be to start with the leaders, but the believers at the bottom, and so try to make URI a grassroots movement. So that's part of the sort of subtle message of bringing the interfaith meetings together with United Religions Initiative to try to merge the religions together by the slow, gradualist approach and education over the next 260 years or so. So, yeah, the URI attempts to find common ground as a unifying principle. So this unifying principle concept I find quite interesting, because what is it really that they're referring to? Could it be that there is a God, or we are all human, or that we're all alive, or that sort of thing? The obvious example would be Christianity. In Christianity, Judaism, and Islam would be that they all meet at Abraham. But this unifying mystery that Bishop Swing spoke about in his book seems to be very, very vague indeed. But what they're trying to do is create a wider, a more inclusive set of global beliefs, where the emphasis will be putting the diverse religions and gods on an equal footing. It doesn't depend on reaching a consensus of vision as much as it aims to create an ever-widening, more inclusive set of global visions and relationships. I'm just reading from the book there, which is a quote from Bishop Swing. So this is why they've set up these cooperation circles, which are decentralized networks of people who meet to discuss their religion and find common ground, or simply meet to make friends and have some fellowship together. So nothing wrong there. But the UN Committee on Spiritual Values and Global Concerns are also aiming for the same thing, a syncretic religion, which is joint, syncretic means joined together, which is authorized by the UN. So that's the direction that that part of the situation is going in. But then eventually it will lead to the state-authorized morality and state religion, which is really their end goal, which is probably going to be a type of control structure. But what they don't realize is that this control system will eventually lead mankind to worship the beast. And this is what the Bible says, after all, in Revelation 13:4. So they worship the dragon, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast. That's the New King James Version. So, yeah, we can see that they are unwittingly creating and slowly and subtly joining us together. They're trying to bring in this concept of common ground, interfaith meetings, to find some sort of way ahead where they can grey out all religions and eventually basically kill them off, as far as I can see, to create their Luciferian religion of the future. And so, yeah, it's all about social engineering.
Yes, and I was thinking, as you're saying all of this, and I was back to that Metropolis, that film, you know, from the 1920s, and it pretty much lays out, in a sense, the Illuminati's plan, I think, you know, in the oldest form of kind of the media there. But then you had writers, you know, like Aldous Huxley and H.G. Wells, you know, with their books. And, of course, they were both friends and Fabian socialists as well. And so they've been sort of conditioning us in a way for this for a long time.
That's right. Yes, Aldous Huxley, he wrote Brave New World, and his brother Julian was high up within the UN. And, of course, you can see that the plan that Huxley mentions is for society to be subjugated basically under the state, and that there is a plan for humanity, and that it certainly doesn't involve Jesus Christ or democracy. So this more modern social engineering goes back to the Illuminati and its founder, Adam Weishaupt, who started the Bavarian Illuminati in 1776. Originally, it was a secret society which called for the revolution and overthrow of the existing social order. Its code name was Spartacus.
They actually just, sorry to interrupt, but I think it's interesting, you know, you've just mentioned that his code name was Spartacus, because it reminds me of Winston Churchill. You know, a lot of people think Winston Churchill was a hero, but in 1922, he said, from the days of Spartacus Weishaupt, Karl Marx, Trotsky, and so on and so on. And he knew exactly who they were and the code name of Weishaupt being Spartacus. And then later on, you know, after he was prime minister and all that, there was another even more New World Order quote from Churchill, which makes me believe totally Churchill was an insider of the whole thing.
Yes, he was. From about 1911-12, he was a yes man for the main three who were involved in the setup of World War One. You got Haldane, Asquith, and Sir Edward Grey. They were mainly Balliol, Oxford University members, and they basically, from about 1906 under Milner and others, they've started to set up the concept of World War One. They were desperate to destroy or reduce the power of Germany, because they were the only group, Germany and Russia joined together, were the only group that could really affect their power base. And that's why we had World War One. Mm. And I know that, you know, that's a pretty big statement there, but it is covered in a book by Jerry Doherty. It's called Hidden History, The Secret Origins of World War One. And it's a very, very good book, because it goes into Carol Quigley's Anglo-American establishment book and Tragedy and Hope, pulls out those names, see who was in the Milner group or the Cecil Rhodes group, which we'll look at in a moment. And then it makes the connections behind what was really going on in the lead up to World War One.
Interesting. So you're going back, because I derailed you a little bit there, I think, but we're going back to the Illuminati, because they had basically a set of goals, or a seven-part plan, really, from the word go, didn't they? I think
that's right.
But you can see it playing out now, and of course you could see it reiterated in Karl Marx's teachings and so on.
Absolutely. They're directly in line. The main goals of the Bavarian Illuminati were the abolition of all monarchical governments and patriotism to it, the elimination of private property and inheritance, the destruction of traditional family values, the eradication of all religion, and the creation of a world government with their Masonic king at the top. And this is from their writings, but also John Robison's book, Proofs of a Conspiracy, that he wrote in 1793. And it also fits in with the Protocols of Zion, which we looked at last time, which emerged, we're not sure on the date, maybe as early as 1840 to 1880, perhaps, linked in with the Paris Mitzrayim Lodge. Again, the same sort of beliefs, we've got to destroy. It sounds bizarre, but this is what their goal really, really is. It's to bring humanity down. And if you really think about it, how are they going to control us? They're not going to give us exactly everything that we want. They're going to control us by keeping us down and keeping us sort of low. And that's partly what the Tavistock group is also about. They're a high-level think tank, which was started in 1947. And the aim of that think tank is to engineer world culture. So they aim to use any technique which breaks down the family unit or traditional family values, or the principles of religion, national sovereignty, patriotism, and sexual behavior are used by the Tavistock scientists as methods of crowd control. And that's why we've got this political correctness. It's all about creating conformity, since individualism is one of the biggest obstacles to creating a new world order. They want a public which is conditioned to do as it's told, a public which doesn't ask questions and accepts the mainstream views. And that's why being a Christian is very, very important, because it's taking large sections of the populace out of the clutches of the state. So it's very important to make that realization. Yeah, we've got these slides as well. So you might have conversations with your friends about this sort of thing. But of course, the CIA and their related think tanks spent years studying all these psychological techniques. And in fact, they created slides which the mainstream media put into people's minds, which shut down critical thinking when it comes to certain controversial information. The concept of these slides is to create a conditioned individual whereby rational thinking processes are terminated and any debate is short-circuited or shortcut at the mention of the word conspiracy. So
what do you mean exactly by slides?
They in some way created a method whereby you would go around the information and just shut down on that thought.
Right.
It, to stop, so that people can't break through their conditioning, this sort of concept of just hitting a brick wall. They can't see that because they're so conditioned into what they should believe and what they've been told to believe, etc., that there's no way for them to just go over it. Yeah, they're just sort of blinded to it. Slides. Yeah. So this is why it's quite difficult for people to know and understand what's going on today. But I think some of the elements that we're talking about are quite advanced. So we're going to look at some of the more easy parts, the basic apparatus of who they are and what they're doing. But before we come on to that, I just wanted to also mention about the multi-generational plan. Have you heard of the Rees Committee? This was committee of that was tasked to look into the foundations between 1952.
Yes. Actually, one of my other guests just on recently, John and Joy Heisman, covered a bit about that and what was uncovered. That was a bit of an eye-opener, actually.
Yes, well, it does indeed look like – I haven't listened to that.
Definitely
John.
Worth listening to Joy and John.
Yeah,
they're very much on the same page as you. So,
right. Okay. Well, yes, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation were caught red-handed helping to start World War One, as we mentioned before. And their tax-exempt foundations that were acting subversively to American interests. And there is a multi-generational plan, and that is to keep those families at the top, like the Carnegies, like the Fords, like the Rockefellers, at the top of this pyramid, and to thwart and obfuscate, hide what's really going on. So the foundations were intentionally involved in warping American educational systems, undermining constitutional forms of governance, and creating and funding the Council of Foreign Relations, the CFR, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the Institute of Pacific Relations. So, yeah, it's all there in the Rees Committee. But it seems extraordinary that they couldn't managed to get things to go forward, but there was just not too much power. They just had too much power and just closed it down within the Senate, etc. And so when he wrote his book in 1958, he said it's difficult for the public to understand that some of the great foundations which have done so much for us in some fields have acted tragically against the public interest in others. But the facts are there for the unprejudiced to recognize. So the Rees Committee is interesting to look at. Norman Dodd, he was interviewed, and it shows with outstanding excellent evidence that there is indeed a multi-generational plan going forward. And so this is all part of the deep state con.
Yeah, well, Joy Heisman covered that a bit a couple of weeks ago, and the person that was sent in to do one of the basically audits went crazy. I can't remember the woman's name now, but yeah.
Yes, that's right. She just couldn't understand, you know.
Couldn't handle it, what she found, yeah.
I don't blame her. It must have been a shock, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So let's look at who they are, because shall we look at the religious groups involved that we haven't touched upon so far?
Yep.
So religious groups involved in the rollout of the New World Religion would be United Religions Initiative, as mentioned, and the World Council of Churches are another group set up in 1908, but they are more of an ecumenical group seeking to unify Christian churches. They're not an interfaith group. But the Alliance of World Civilization is a UN think tank promoting cross-cultural activity in mainly the areas of education, youth, migration, and media to create greater understanding between the Islamic world and the West. They actually seek to counter the clash of civilizations narrative between the West and Islam, but really instead are trying to make it this a clash, so one between moderates and extremists. And in this subtle manner, they're trying to cure religious fundamentalism by making the state the authority to decide what is extremist and what is allowed. So in the final analysis, what they're actually saying is that if your belief system makes any absolute claim to be the truth, you must be an extremist.
Scary stuff. Yeah, and so that brings me to Freemasons, because, you know, ostensibly they accept anybody as long as you've got a belief in a higher power, basically. But, you know, when you get to the top of them, and you find out really that it's Lucifer ultimately.
That's correct, and this is why there is a link, I believe, between Freemasonry and Islam. The elite, they like Islam, since it fits in with their religion of the unknowable God and justification through works as well and other aspects. And they are seeking to make Islam a stepping stone into their new eventual Luciferian religion that they want us to adhere to. So this is why, on the one hand, they promote Islam, calling it a religion of peace. So we've got this Islam versus Western society psyop, which crops up, I think, all the time, and could be one of the most important strategies of the hidden government to bring us into their managed society. It's the promotion of good Islam and at the same time the demoting of bad Islam. So if it's the wrong fundamentalist type, and that's why we've got ISIS and all of this going on, they highlight the violent aspects of it and as one side of the dialectic, to bring all religions out of their traditional orthodoxy and into the grey, cultural, humanistic, relative belief system that they're espousing. And then they try to convert everyone to good Islam at the same time. And so this strategy first emerged in Samuel Huntington's book, Clash of Civilizations. And Samuel Huntington was, of course, a CFR member. So the reason why this strategy is so important is that it plays precisely into the New World Religion, since they have to break Islam and Western society so they can agitate each side and smash them together to form the grayed out society, which is their end goal. So
interesting.
And this is what the Tony Blair Institute on Global Change is all about. It used to be called the Tony Blair Faith Foundation. It's an interfaith organization seeking to promote peace by breaking down religious differences between the faiths. And it takes the view that the differences between faiths are based on the distortions of faith rather than the faiths themselves, which all teach respect, justice, and compassion, etc. In other words, it seeks to fit into the same grouping, in particular Islam, which it seeks to promote as good Islam and bad Islam. So the foundation has actually been accused of promoting one and I, this is a quote, one and only one religious confession, which a universal global political power would impose on the entire world. In other words, Tony Blair, he's trying to grey out religious beliefs and push us into their version of globalization and globalized beliefs. Mm. So it's a bit of a joke, really, isn't it?
Yes.
So once you can see their strategies, they're so transparent, but they like to hide them and sell them to us. And they use their media, which is completely under their control, to enable that to happen.
And you see all sorts of shenanigans, I think, making it look like things are not compatible and opposite each other and so on. And yet I made a video recently that showed the total link between the British royal family and Freemasonry, the Church of England and the Roman Catholic Church. Basically, yeah. You know, they've got heads and positions anyway. It's like, and yet, you know, ostensibly they're supposed to all, Freemasons are meant to be against the Catholics and the Church of England's, you know, at odds with the Catholics and so on. And yet it really, there's just so much, so much interplay between them and so much control that it all stems back to the same heads. And then you've got the Rothschilds, you know, like how much, well, I know they're powerful in the banking world, of course, we know that and they're, Sir Evelyn de Rothschild's been the Queen's official banker and the Vatican's as well, advisor to the Queen and advisor to the Vatican and so on. Now, how much, you know, because there's a lot of money in the Rothschilds, how much of that went into the starting of the Illuminati, do you think?
Well, I don't think that Amschel Meyer Rothschild was in the Bavarian Illuminati because he was Jewish and perhaps they didn't have many Jews within the initial Illuminati, but he was a Knight of Malta and he would have almost certainly have come into contact with many, not just a few, but many tens of Illuminati members. And it is also likely that the Rothschilds would have funded the Illuminati through Karl Hesse-Kassel, because the Rothschilds' wealth was largely achieved through association with the family of Hesse-Kassel, which is in Bavaria, for whom he also made a good amount of money for, and then himself later on, having served, Amschel Rothschild, Meyer Rothschild, served a three-year apprenticeship in Hanover at the Bank of Oppenheim first. But he was not in the Bavarian Illuminati, but he was a Knight of Malta and he was a Mason as well. And so the link is definitely there. And certainly Karl's money went into it. And in fact, the Congress of Williamsbad, which was in 1782, I think it was. Karl is... and was one of the main, and his father Frederick was part of it. So they made their money through contributing about 20,000 men to the Anglo-Prussian army during the War of American Independence. So we've got
that broke up there. You'll have to repeat that.
Yeah, Amschel Meyer Rothschild, he was very, very closely linked into the Hesse-Kassel family. And some of these people he would have met, it's all covered by in Terry Mallinson's book, which is called Perfectiblists, which is the original name of what the Bavarian Illuminati were called. And obviously you've got Adam Weishaupt, Baron von Knigge, and von Born, for example, he was the prototype character behind Zarastro in Mozart's Masonic opera, The Magic Flute. And Leopold Mozart, who was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's father, he was even more closely linked in. It's a very, very interesting study to do the link between Mozart and the Illuminati. And then, of course, we've got Hegel. Hegel as well. He was in the Illuminati. That's where the Hegel's dialect comes from. Yeah. And that's one of their ways that they go forward. It's the left wing and the right wing.
Yes, and people don't see that. I'm surprised how many people that sort of follow conspiracies don't actually really get the whole left right thesis, antithesis, and then the synthesis aspect of it. For example, they see George Soros as the bad guy, and they don't look at, okay, so if he's the guy that's the thesis, who's the antithesis? And I just think there's only one person that fits that role. I'm not going to go down there in this show, but people are not seeing that. So it's all part of the theater, I guess. Yes. What about the skull and bones? You know, where do they fit? We've just had George Bush's funeral. Both of the Bushes were skull and bones, and of course John Kerry as well. Where do they fit in with all of this?
Well, it seems more than likely that there is a link between the Bavarian Illuminati and Skull and Bones. It's not far-fetched at all, in my opinion, to say that. There's only 46 years between the so-called dissolution of the Bavarian Illuminati in 1786, even though we know that books were written by John Robison and Augustin Barruel about the Illuminati afterwards, in fact, in 1797. So saying that Skull and Bones isn't linked in terms of years isn't really true. And then, of course, they've got the same regent ceremony. And what's more, when the Skull and Bones building, the tomb, was broken into, they found German writing within it. So I think it is safe to say that there is a link between Skull and Bones and the Illuminati, and people who are Skull and Bones members are Illuminati. I mean, it is possible that once these secret societies set up, they continue, and it's very difficult for them to sort of break down because the new blood is coming through and they want to continue it. It's a sort of club. Mm. So, yeah, it reemerged via William Russell and Alfonso Taft in 1832, and that's where we get the special number that they have of 322. And then, of course, Alfonso Taft, who started the Skull and Bones, his son Howard Taft was the 27th president. So it goes directly from, you know, the Illuminati are there, and they managed to get their president in with the next generation. Hmm. And of course, Prescott Bush, he funded Hitler in the build-up of World War II. And George and Jeb Bush, as you mentioned, and yeah, both Georges are members of this, and so is Stephen A. Schwarzman. He's a member of the Skull and Bones, and now we've got the more modern version of the Rhodes Scholarship.
And of course, Schwarzman is a longtime friend of Donald Trump's, and yes, he has been part of Trump's advisory and so on and so on. And people don't want to see the link, but it's right there.
Absolutely, 100%. These bankers and these top Skull and Bones and politicians, and they are all linked together, and that's how they end up being there. It's secrecy is very important. They compartmentalize. The full conspiracy is only known to literally probably only five people, but everything is compartmentalized so that people only have a specific area in which they're involved in. And if there were large groups of people sharing in this conspiracy, they would very quickly give themselves away. But using secret societies within secret societies to run the globe like a business for their benefit, it works. All too well.
And what about the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission? Where do they fit in?
Yeah, well, they were initially set up by Lionel Curtis, who was under the Milner Group, which is part of the Cecil Rhodes Group. And so they were really the sort of Eastern establishment that was created with the joining together of the Royal Institute of International Affairs and the Eastern Establishment in the sort of 1910s, 1920s. And the Council of Foreign Relations is the de facto hidden government sitting behind the real government in America.
So, that broke up. Did you say de facto? Was that the word you used?
Yeah.
Yep.
De facto. Government behind. And so their agents have infiltrated high office across the entire U.S. government system, and they seek to carry out the precise dictates of the New World Order conspirators. So they started the CIA, the National Security Council, and they're taking their orders from the Harold Pratt House in New York. But I don't know if you've seen that video of Hillary Clinton, where she just divulges perhaps a little bit more than she really wanted, that they know where to go to get their orders from the mothership that is the new Washington CFR building. So it's all there. And we've got, I mentioned Richard Haass in the back book, and that he talks about the 30 years war. And so from 2001 to 2031, we've got this 30 years war that was mentioned by them. We're not 100% certain what they really mean by that, but I assume it's, you know, taking out the neocons' agenda of reducing the Middle East to rubble and actually possibly even doing something to do with the neocons are looking at China now, aren't they? Which might be some evidence that we're closing in on some sort of conclusion. But
it's also interesting too that I think that when you mentioned Stephen Schwarzman before, because he's one of the big backers of Mohammed bin Salman's NEOM project in Saudi Arabia, and of course Mohammed bin Salman is supposedly against fundamentalist Islam, and you know, and part of moderate Islam. Of course, you know, that's a whole other story. But as you were talking about that before, I was thinking, there is a tie-up between those guys, and of course Kushner as well. But anyway, that's kind of going down a rabbit trail. But yeah. And what about the Bilderberg group?
Well, you've got Prince Bernard, who set it up, and he was involved in Lockheed Martin scandal. And we can also see that the Bilderberg group, they are the European counterpart, perhaps, to the Trilateral Commission. And yeah, they are there. They're not as secret as they used to be. They could also be involved within the Gladio army, but they are. They used to have Peter Sutherland there, but he's now dead. But he was in charge of migration, so that's part of their strategy, is to bring Europe down. They have to flood Europe with as many immigrants as they possibly can, to just destroy the homogeneity of the society. So it all goes back to reducing people's sort of ability to get together and affect change. Not that they can't affect change if they're different, but if you agitate them along the way, which is what they're doing, keep them poor, keep them down, then, you know, it works as a strategy of keeping control. And that's what they're doing.
You mentioned the Milner Group earlier. Probably a lot of people don't know that one. What's the Milner Group?
Yes. Well, when Cecil Rhodes died, the torch that he was passed on was given by Rhodes to Alfred Milner. And he came back from South Africa with a group of sort of underlings who started to take control of the basic political structure in the UK, and also sort of infiltrate his own secret society members into the Liberals and start to take over the UK government. And they together started the Council of Foreign Relations, which was the American counterpart of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which they started as well. So you've got Rhodes, you've got Milner, you've got the CFR, you've got the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and then you've got this plethora of other institutions, international institutions that they set up all over the Pacific, Australia, New Zealand, India, Canada, and it's all linked in to this one world government belief that they were very keen on. They were all Freemasons, and they were all really rooting for the establishment of Cecil Rhodes' dream, which was the one world government under their control. And so I believe that practically all of the heads of the European Union, trilateral, etc., some of them will be, they must be members of the of this subversive secret society. And for example, what was the recruiting ground for the Milner Group? It was Oxford University. It states it quite categorically in Carol Quigley's book. And All Souls and Balliol were part of it. And out of the last eight prime ministers in the UK, five of them have just happened to be Oxford University members. Mm. You've got Wilson, Thatcher, Blair, Cameron, and May, they all went to Oxford University. Callaghan is also in the group because he was tutored under Harold Laski at the London School of Economics, and that's a Rockefeller-funded establishment. That only leaves Major and Brown standing outside. Mm. So Boris Johnson, he went to Oxford, and I believe that there are many, many top-level people within our society. That's why Brexit's taking so long, folks. It's because these people are all working it out. They know the outcome already, but it's all a game. It's all a contrived thing to keep you low, to keep people diverted away from what's really going on. So you can see the smoke and mirrors. And of course, we know that most of them are Freemasons, which makes them Luciferians. So it goes back to the age of reason and intellect and the century of philosophy that they don't believe in Christ. They believe in all of this sort of brotherhood of man system and theosophy and new world order stuff.
Now, you mentioned Freemasons, and of course, they seem to put a lot of their stuff in terms of numbers and numerology out all over the place, and not just Freemasons, but a lot of these other occult groups. And everything seems to be done with this numerology in the dates, and some of the stuff's hidden in plain sight, some of it's pretty obvious. But why do they do that, do you think, with the specific numbers?
It's a method of gaining control. I know that there may be no magic, and therefore that seems odd. But for example, 9/11 is the name of 9/11, but it's also the emergency number for most countries and certainly the US. So every time you have an emergency, it will trigger off some sort of deep buried memory, perhaps of 9/11, which is a way of putting us in fear, putting us off balance and controlling us. So numbers hidden in plain sight are part of their system to control us. Even if it doesn't work, there's still the linguistic issue that they use to create this sort of fear panic mode. And that's why 9/11 is called 9/11. And it's also why you've got Ground Zero, because Ground Zero for where the World Trade buildings were, it's normally a reference to the epicenter of an atomic bomb. And yet they've been using it for 9/11 to sort of big it up and make it bigger than it really, really is. And so Daniel Lewin, changing tack, going back to the numbers again, he was in, Daniel Lewin was a special ops Mossad agent. He was the first person to die on 9/11. He was in row 9 on flight 11. So they like to repeat these numbers. 11's one of their main master numbers. And
that's really interesting, isn't it? I didn't know that one. So
yeah. And then you've got his watch, his watch, which was a Swatch, which was a hijack. It was called Swatch Hijack. Uh-huh. And it was on the 11th hour, the 11th minute. In the background, it looked like two twin towers. So you've got flight AA, where A is 1. AA is 11, obviously, AA 11.
Yeah.
Flight 11, and then you've got flight AA 175, and then you've got flight 186. Sorry, not flight 186. You add those together, you get 186, and you divide by 2, you get the thelemic number 93. Now, most people don't know what that thelema number is, but that's the number that Aleister Crowley used. It's 39 way around, and it's in Koine Greek. It means will and love. So they, instead of saying do what that will shall be the whole of the law, love is the law, love under will, they just put their signature as 93. And so the flights themselves are a sort of symbol of 93, because if you've got flight 93, that's 93. You've got 175, you've got 11, you add those all together, you've got 93. Are you with me?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of so complicated, but yeah, it definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so it's there. And then we've got this suspicious number of the 3,000 people who died. And could it be that that number of 3,000 is a religious number connected to their religion? And the reason why we think that the number is suspicious is that we know some of the supposed dead people's social security names and numbers do not exist on the master death list that is, a US system of recording people. And so the SSDI, which is the Social Security Death Index, is a register of all US social security numbers belonging to deceased persons. It's a guide to those who have died. Not many of the supposedly dead passengers turn up in this index. Flight AA11, which crashed into the North Tower, had 11 crew members, according to the published list. And the flight attendants, obviously, Betty Young and Madeleine Sweeney. The SSDI list cites only one of these 11 persons as having died on that day. And so there we have it, that could it be that the number 3,000 is suspicious? Because when Moses came down from the mountain with the tablet of the Ten Commandments, he found Aaron and the Israelites having molded a golden calf, and they were having a party worshipping the calf in Exodus 32:28, which I've got open here. 32:28. So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. So when Moses comes down, he sees that they're worshipping the calf. They have a bit of a sort of rebellion, and 3,000 people are killed. And the reverse theology of that, as it were, is in Acts 2:41, where we've got, find it in my new Bible, 2:41. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. And so this is where you've got at Pentecost the first believers, 3,000 of them. And yet on 9/11, you've also got 3,000. So could it be that the number's suspicious? We already know that some of the records are incorrect. Could it be that this is part of their religion, that they have to do the sort of reverse mass to get us into their new world religion? Mm. And the people doing it, extraordinary, isn't it?
I mean, that's the whole other thing, which we haven't really got time to go into today. But were there any actual planes anyway that hit the towers, you know? Or were they holograms or missiles or what the heck? But anyway, that's probably for another day. But
yeah, no, there were no planes. Everyone I've spoken to who was there says that I never saw a plane. So there we go. I mean, the only people that are saying there are planes are these witnesses that are falsified witnesses.
Yeah, so, and the other one that hit the Pentagon, you look at the hole there, there's no airplane wings. That looks more like a cruise missile or something that hit that. So anyway, we better not go too far down that track. We're already about 53 minutes into the show.
Yep, absolutely. So that's something that you can look at the names and look at those scriptures there. So yeah, I often think to myself, is it naive that the elite should be doing what they're doing? Couldn't they be doing something different? And I don't think it is naive to believe that they have all the money, they have all the power, they are in control of everything. And I know that most people believe that it's a sort of SH1T situation that happens. But I can tell you that there is purpose. Look at the neocons, for example. They are surely a smoking gun where you have them get running around, creating wars wherever they want, doing what they want, and no one seems to be able to bring them to justice. And so I don't think that it's naive to think that, you know, if I was in control, I would be doing things differently. Yes, of course you would, because you're a normal person, common decency. You know, these people, they belong to this weird religion. That's why they're doing all this weird New World Order stuff. And eventually, before this century is out, we're going to probably see a massive population reduction as well as this new horrible Luciferian religion. So there we go.
Yes. Oh, well, and you certainly can see the pieces of that puzzle coming together all the time quite rapidly. And, of course, something could go, you know, they may have their time frame plans, but then God is ultimately in control and things could be sped up or slowed down. And, you know, Jesus will return when he's ready to do it.
Yes.
Not when the elite have their, you know, plans. So who knows, you know. But
yes.
Anyway, yeah, fascinating. Fascinating discussion. You got any last thoughts for this show, James? We'll definitely have to be getting you back in the new year again, because there's just so much that you come up with, which is fascinating. So, have you got anything that you want to add before we close up in this particular show?
No, not really. Just keep the faith, everyone. Have a good Christmas. And
enjoy buy James's book. Don't forget James's book. Yeah. Tell them the name of the book again, James.
Yes. It's called The New World Religion and the Beliefs of the Elite. I've tried to make it inexpensive. It's on Amazon. Please do buy it and put a review up for me. That would be fantastic.
Yes, yeah, and I must do that because I've read the book and I should review it because it's one of the best books around on this type of subject, so I should add a review too. And if anyone else has read it, do the same. Add a review for James and help him sell some more books because they are cheap and I absolutely recommend people get a copy of it because not only, James, have you got great writing in it, but you've got so many resources that people can look up where you show them where they are, whether they're websites or other books and what page things are on and so on. And so people could just be researching forever just from your book. And so I don't know how you managed to put such an amazing thing together. You must have done a heck of a lot of research yourself. And I really appreciate the work that you have done.
Thank you very much, Tony. That's really kind of you to say that. Yeah, I'm quite touched. Thank you.
So we'll have to catch you again in the new year, and thank you so very much for being on the show again today, and have a great Christmas, James.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. God bless.
And folks, don't forget to like this if you're watching the video and share it, and you can find all of our shows on YouTube. You can also find them on our website, aminutetomidnight.com, and on iTunes as audio only versions. And don't forget to share them and like them. And all the music is mine. I write, play and record all the music in the show, and you can download free music on the A Minute to Midnight website as well, and we do have articles on there to read as well as our show. So visit our website, and I will catch you again hopefully with another episode of the A Minute to Midnight show in a few days' time. So have a great week. God bless, and we'll catch you soon.